This is the Indie Drills Podcast, and I'm your host, Chad Wilson. I'm also the owner of All Eyes DB Camp and author of 101 DB Tips. In this podcast, we're going to be talking about any and everything having to do with defensive back play. From technique to current events, we'll cover it all just like the guys in the back half blanket the wide receivers. I have over 20 years playing and coaching and training in this game, and I'm ready to use all of that experience to bring you the best experience in the Indie Drills Podcast. So let's go. Welcome to the Indie Drills Podcast. It's a DB podcast. Been a while since I've done this. It's been several months. Want to get back into it because there's so much going on in the world of defense and backs. And, you know, as I've said, since I started this Indie Drills Podcast, there just aren't a whole lot of defensive back podcasts out there, if there are any. I know there's some defensive ones. I do follow a few. But something solely devoted to defensive backs, I don't know that there are many, so I'm glad to get back to it here. And we're going to hit a number of topics on the show today. I'm going to talk about Indy period, as we are in spring football across the country and college football. We're heading into that for high schools that do have it. Difficult for me to understand that some states don't have spring football, but that is the case. Maybe it's weather, tradition, whatever the case may be. But talking about the Indie Drills individual period. And of course, it's you know, the name of the podcast is Indie Drills. And so why not talk a little bit about individual period, as I have some thoughts on some things that I've seen and observed regarding indie periods and Indie Drills and things of that nature. I'm going to take a question from the mailbag, as I do each and every time I have the Indie Drills podcast. And also going to talk about drills. The main topic is, no, there isn't a secret drill for that. And I'll get into more about that. That's going to be at the towards the end of our podcast. But happy to have all you guys here. The Indie Drills podcast is sponsored by this great book that I've written. I've got my own sponsors, right? 101 DB Tips. Everything you want to know about playing defensive back is right here in this book, available in soft cover or ebook edition. So listen, the topics are numerous, okay? Footwork, talking about footwork in here, ball steals, tackling, playing zone, playing man, how to train in the offseason. The section in here on coaching, just about everything that you need if you're a player or a coach, especially for you coaches out there that, you know, are just now getting into coaching the defensive back position. Great book for you. Even if you have been coaching for a while, this is a great book for you to touch up on some things. Basically, everything that I have been able to acquire, both in my time as a player, and I played for a couple of Hall of Fame coaches, as well as my time coaching and training. That's a lot of stuff. The fact that I was able to pare it down to only 101 tips is kind of amazing, but just little tidbits and things that I have acquired along the way, presenting them to you, and the feedback on this has been amazing. Book's been out for over a year now, and the feedback that I've gotten from coaches and players and people who have had a chance to purchase the book and read through it has been amazing, and so I feel really good about that there. So I'll have a link in the description, whether you are streaming this on your podcast, streaming software, or you are watching me on YouTube. There will be a link in the description. If you play DB, coach DB, train DBs, definitely something that you want to pick up. All right, what's in the news? It's been a while since I've been on, and I was distressed, for lack of a better term. Last month? When all of the safeties were getting released, couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe these guys are out on the market. These are great football players. The biggest one bugging me was Justin Simmons being released from the Denver Broncos. You know, apparently that's about money, as a lot of these things are. But in my opinion, Justin Simmons should have been able to play the entirety of his career as a Denver Bronco, unless it was one of these situations where a guy just refuses to retire. He's way past his usefulness. And we've seen that in all kinds of sports. unless it was that type of situation, which I don't, you know, knowing Justin's, what I do know about Justin Simmons, he's a guy that I had a chance to work with when he was coming out and going into the league, coming out of Boston College, helped train him for the combine and pro day. I don't think he would have been a guy that would fall into that situation. You know, football is what he does. It's not who he is. And I don't think he would have been in that situation, but you never know. Certainly, he's not in that situation at the moment. And he was released by the Denver Broncos because they are in cap hell. And a lot of this stemming from the contract that they gave to Russell Wilson. This is not something new for NFL teams. NFL teams right now are in this situation. It's been banged into everyone's head, the media, apparently the front offices, that if you don't have a top shelf quarterback, if you don't have a Patrick Mahomes on your football team, well, you're just not going to have a chance to win the Super Bowl. That has been hammered into everyone's head, has it not? And so everyone is overdrafting quarterbacks. We will see that towards the end of this month. There'll be quarterbacks drafted in this first round at the top of the draft that had no business being there. And we'll learn that 4 or 5 years from now that that was a total bust. They paid them a lot of money. And when they pay them a lot of money, that means there's less money for everyone else. And so, voila, guys that should be on the team get cut because, you know, they'd like to be compensated for what it is they bring to the team. And they will not have the opportunity to do that. They will be cut while the team is forced to pay someone who's being overcompensated for their contribution to the team. And that is quarterbacks. And so Justin Simmons was a casualty of that. And saw Kevin Byer cut from the Eagles. I feel like the Eagles wasted that guy's time. I mean, he did make the decision to sign with them. He did leave Tennessee. They brought him in. And at the point in time that he came in Philadelphia, they were a complete disaster defensively, as what we saw towards the end of the year. That's one of the biggest things I'm going to be keeping my eyes on as this season goes, as 2024 rolls out in the NFL. I really want to see what Vic Fangio, who was with the Dolphins last year, and is now the new defensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles, can do to clean up the mess that was known as the Philadelphia Eagles' defense towards the end of the year. I'm not kidding, folks. In all of my years looking and studying and watching all 22 coaches film, and I've done this for a long time, what I saw from the Philadelphia Eagles defensively those last few games of the season might be the worst I've seen in the NFL on film. Just total and utter confusion. It was very much a disaster. And, you know, I'm a little slow to say that, but absolutely was indeed that. Also in the news, Logan Ryan is retired from the NFL. What a solid player. What a solid career he was able to put together. Not a guy that's ever been an all-pro or, you know, made it to a Pro Bowl. But, you know, if you talk to guys that have played with him, if you talk to, you know, probably all of the coaching staffs that he worked under, they will all say he was a glue back there. Had a solid career. Came into the league out of Rutgers. Had a great rookie year. 5 interceptions with the New England Patriots. Picked up a title or two there. I think he did end up getting 2 titles with them, moved on to Tennessee and the Giants, and spent the last couple of seasons with Tampa Bay and San Francisco. He's calling it a career. 19 career interceptions. And again, a solid player, very good with communication back there. And he's calling it a career. Tre'Davious White has signed with the Los Angeles Rams, and the Rams have, you know, they've been the team to just pick up veteran players like they did with Jalen Ramsey a few years ago, brought him on. It'd be interesting to see what Frey White can bring to the table. What an unfortunate last few years for him. The Achilles tear, then the ACL tear has really robbed him of the last 3 seasons because he was on fire, came into the league. 12 interceptions, really, really fast in his first 3 seasons, providing lockdown coverage. One of the league leaders in passes defense, and just got riddled with injuries seemingly right after he signed that big contract with the Buffalo Bills. So they released him, and the Rams have picked him up. So I'm going to be looking forward to seeing what Trey White brings to the table in this coming season for the Rams, who, you know, have not been shy about picking up veterans and high priced, although I'm not sure what Tre'Davious White signed for, but high profile, let's say, high profile of free agents in the past. So be interesting to see what he brings there. The Rams do need some help in the secondary, particularly at the cornerback position. So he should bring some stability there if he's anywhere close to being a player that he was prior to the two back-to-back season-ending injuries that he's suffered over the last couple of years. So that part's going to be interesting. Still out there is Stephon Gilmore, who has been on a couple of teams. He's kind of done the Darrell Reedus type thing over the last few years, and betting on himself, signing short-term contracts, and kind of moving around the league. So he's still out there after what I thought was a pretty good season with the Dallas Cowboys. It didn't end well in the playoffs, but there, you know, could be a number of reasons for that. We could go on and on about that. I don't know that we're going to have all the answers about what happened to the Dallas Cowboys and their secondary in that final game against the Packers in the playoffs last year. But Stephon Gilmore is out there. And I found this interesting. Stephon Gilmore has obviously had a very solid career, twice an All-Pro, five-time Pro Bowler, 31 interceptions in his career. He's been in the league since 2012. So quick math says that's 12 seasons. This would be his 13th if he's on a squad this year. 31 interceptions. I look at Justin Simmons, came in the league in 2016, and he has 30 career interceptions. This kind of snuck up on me. And the last four seasons, he's had 19 interceptions. His best 4 years have been the last four, which again, really makes me wonder why the Broncos had to make that decision. You talk to any of those guys in that secondary, that was definitely the leader back there, perhaps the leader on the defense. And so very sorry to see him go, but from a number standpoint, 30 interceptions in his, what is this, 8-year career? That's good work. So I'm definitely want to see where he ends up landing this season. Whoever gets him is going to get a very, very solid safety to hold things together. I hope he goes to a good spot, though. Nevertheless, with everyone running quarters in the NFL, it seems like we are just giving way to the fact that offenses are explosive and that teams are going to score. That would not necessarily be my mode of attack if I was a coordinator in the league right now. I'm not just going to fall into the whole, we're going to play the safe quarters thing and just keep the ball in front of us and let the team just move down the field. I don't believe in that at all. Yes, the rules are constantly being curved towards offense. And to be honest, yeah, I make noise about that on my Twitter account, DBTips101, and, you know, on Instagram as well, at All Eyes DBCamp. I do, you know, kind of get after offenses and how they tailor everything to them. But by and large, that's kind of always been the deal in the NFL. They realize that while defenses win championships, it's offenses that put people in the seats. They want to see points. And we are in this era of low attention spans, you know, because of social media and things of that. And it's just very hard to ask the common fan to come sit down in a stadium and watch a, you know, 17-14 football game. They just don't understand that part of it. Too much defense. They want to see points. They want to hear the cannons go off. They want to see fireworks. They want to see all of that. And so the league understands that. And notice one thing about the National Football League. If it makes money, they're in on it. Hence the reason we now have a whole bunch of DraftKings and FanDuel ads being run during football games. Something that was just completely a sin 20 years ago. So it makes money. Everyone's doing the fantasy sports anyway. So they want the 40-35 games. With that being the case, I still would not give way to that. I'm still going to want to be physical on defense and not sit back in these quarters coverages that everybody wants to run. You know, full-on reports being given out now about who runs quarters and how they run it. And just about every team does that on defense. We are a copycat league in the NFL. And so Everyone's running the quarters, and then now, so what's the value of a defensive back if you're just going to sit back there and just come up and make tackles? And I'm kind of seeing some of that. With that being said, it becomes all the more important for defensive backs to be on their game, to be on point with their technique and everything else that goes into being a defensive back. Because if you're a high school football player that wants to be seen by college coaches, right now they're trying to shrink the position. So you better be on point. You better have good footwork. You better be able to tackle. You better be able to play the ball in the air, something that a lot of young guys struggle with. They don't want to look for the football. You better be good at all these things, because the little pool that you are in is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. So definitely be on point with your skills, be an athlete, all that great stuff. These are all things that you need to be on, because you don't just move on to the next level. Same thing for you college players that are watching, and you guys that are in the NFL. You better be on point, because right now the thinking is they can kind of put, yo, we just put anyone back there and we'll be fine. Just get a guy to, you know, keep a receiver in front of us and come up and make a tackle. And that kind of seems to be the mindset that a lot of teams are in. Just don't give up the big play, that type of scary type of defense. And, you know, it's kind of what I think when you run quarters all the time. This is not old school quarters that I see, not the stuff that the Dolphins ran in the late 90s and early 2000s, where it was a physical quarters. You were pressing guys, and the way that they did it, because that was just their whole defense. It's not that. It's a whole laid back play, 9-10 yards off, bail as soon as the ball is snapped, just keep the ball in front of you, and hopefully the offense will make a mistake at some point and get sacked. Because everything is into the pass rush now, even though you can barely hit the quarterback, is into the pass rush. Maybe it'll get sacked. It'll be put behind the chains. And now us playing soft means we can just keep them in front of the sticks, and hopefully they have to punt. This is defense now, not just in the NFL, but in college and, you know, trickle down to high school as well. If you are a coordinator kind of looking for a direction to go in, and this is my advice to you, don't buy into that. Yeah, you can have quarters in your repertoire, but just being soft and giving way to the defense, to the offense, and just saying, oh, we don't want to give up the big play. Do what Steve Spagnuolo did throughout the entire playoffs and the entire season, by the way, and just be aggressive. Be aggressive. Make sure your coaches can teach the techniques. You still need to be able to lock up and cover guys in that secondary, and teach these guys good technique, because it really is about technique. Don't get caught up in, oh, I need amazing athletes to cover man-to-man back there. Not entirely true. Yes, they need to have some athleticism, but if you're teaching really good technique, you can play man coverage, you can get after quarterbacks, and you can force the offense's hand. You don't have to give up 35 points a game and hope that your offense scores 40. Just not with that. And with that, that's probably a good time for me to roll into the subtopic for today, and that is the disappearing Indy. I asked this question about a month ago on my Twitter account, again, DBChips101, about how, and the question was, how long should your Indy period be? I don't exactly remember how I worded this, but basically the question was, how long is a good Indy period? And I was shocked at some of the answers. And this was coming from guys that were defensive back coaches. Some answers were 15 minutes. If I got 15 minutes as a coach for Indy, I was pissed. I mean, what am I going to get done in 15 minutes? There is the core drills. That's the everyday drills. The EOD drills, as a lot of coaches call them. I call it the matrix when I was coaching, but there are those drills. That's going to take anywhere from 5 to 7 minutes if you're doing it right. You know, just the basic skills that guys need, a pedal, a weave, or, you know, crossover run, hip flips, things of that nature. That's 5 to 7 minutes right there. If you're running it efficiently and you've got some, you know, veteran type players that have been going through this. After that, in that 8 minutes, what really are you going to get done? And I saw not just one guy put that, quite a few guys doing that. And then on top of that, you will have defensive coordinators that will come to the defensive back coach and say, hey, in your indie period today, I need you to devote a certain amount of time to going over our palm rules, or going over our cover two rules, our tamper rules, or, you know, you have to go in and now set up and talk, go through the scheme and not necessarily the individual tools that the players need within that scheme. So it's a lot of standing there. And if this receiver goes here, you're going to go there. And if this guy goes here, you're going to go there. That's part of your indie period. Now, if you've got 15 minutes, there goes your 8 minutes after your EOD drills. So where do you find the time now to develop those individual skills that the player needs to thrive in your defensive system? We've become overly reliant on scheme and guys knowing where to be here, there, there. Like, if you need an indie period, plus you need a whole nother 15, 20 minutes of a walkthrough period, plus you've got all the meetings. If it takes all of that for a guy to grasp your system, your scheme, and I'm pretty much talking right now at the high school level, because these are the guys that I was getting the answer from, but even at the college level as well, where individual period is totally disappearing, they need that long. You're probably running too much. You're probably too complicated in your defensive scheme, and the guys aren't getting enough tools. So, you know, when a guy is not working well in your system, and the tendency is, oh, well, this guy's just not good enough. I'm seeing that a lot at the college level. They'll throw away a prospect in that first summer practice. That first training camp, they have determined whether or not a kid can play at the school. And there's just really not an eye towards developing a player. Maybe he has some deficiencies when he comes in, but we're going to develop this guy from year one to year two to year three. And maybe he's not ready to play right now, but in year three, that's going to be a high quality player. And he will be able to make plays for us and perhaps become an All-American and become that guy. Just not seeing that anymore. And this coincides with the fact that you're not giving these guys the tools to survive. I can't tell you how many guys I get in the pre-draft training for combines and pro days that can't backpedal. Their crossover run is woefully insufficient. Flipping their hips is an issue. And I've got to ask them, what did you guys do in practice? And a lot of them will say, hey, we didn't do much in our indie. We didn't have much of an indie period. We'd run through a couple of drills really, really fast. Then we'd start talking about scheme and rules and, you know, what we're going to do about against the team this week. I understand that that has to be a part of your practice. Yeah, you definitely have to put a game plan together for a team. But if guys don't have these basic skills, they are going to fail in your scheme. It doesn't matter how many times you go over it. It doesn't matter how much you upload into that iPad. It doesn't matter how many meetings you have. If they don't have the basic footwork and skills, then they're going to fail anyway. And you can't keep blaming it on the player and just rotating the player out and bringing another guy in. Oh, this guy sucks. Let's go to transfer portal, bring another one in. Or, you know, let's go get a better freshman class in to replace these guys. The deficiency is in your development methods. And it starts with that individual period for defensive backs. Defensive back is as technical a position as any on that football field. I get it. We all want to say quarterback is the hardest thing. There's all the reads and managing a team. Yeah, I can't take that away from you. But in terms of technique and the technical part of playing the game, defensive back is as technical as it comes. The only thing close to that is offensive line, you know, very technical in there. And, you know, as I've gotten older in the game and started coaching and training, I just developed a real love for what's going on in the trenches. And you would hardly believe it in a guy my size and played primarily defense, played that all throughout college, that I would be so interested in what's going on in the trenches with the big guys that don't look like me. But it's just the technique that's involved there. And so if you don't develop that, if an offensive line did not really get into the tools and technique of what they need. Are they going to make the blocks? Are they going to be able to open holes for the running back? Will they be able to protect the quarterback? I did have some offensive line coaches who, you know, follow me for whatever reason, chime in, and not one of them came up with an answer of 15 minutes. No, that would be suicide for them. Most of the answers were 25 minutes, 30 minutes. And the good thing about offensive line is when you start getting into most of the special teams outside of, you know, field goal, they get to go off to the side and go work on technique. So while we're doing kickoff and kickoff return, punt and punt return and all that good stuff, the O-line coach gets another 10 or 15 minutes to work with his guys on top of whatever he got in the ending period. And all of those guys say it's much needed. Yes, I understand there's pre-practice and post-practice work that can be done. Yes, when I coached, that was essential for guys. Didn't force them to do it, however. Told them these are the things that need to be done. And I'm going to leave it up to you. This is the part where you do the extra to become that elite player that you want to be. Let me see how much you want it. Tell them, walk off. Maybe every now and then I watched from a distance, but I didn't need to. I would know based on what I see being put out on the field, who's actually staying and putting in that extra work. But getting back to the amount of time in Indy, 15 minutes is just not going to be enough. So there have been times where I've talked about backpedaling and how essential it is. And I will get guys that will argue with me about, hey, Nick Saban doesn't make his guys backpedal. And, you know, some guys just can't do it. All right. Number one, I think Nick Saban might have sold you guys a bag of goods. Those guys, when Nick Saban was the coach, the defensive backs started off every practice with backpedaling. If you'd gone to an Alabama practice, you saw that. They start off with backpedaling, then they would go to weaving, and those guys backpedaled. Now, it would just so happen a lot of what they called in the games in the late years with Nick Saban involved the cornerbacks pressing a lot. So they would press and they would bail. That doesn't mean these guys didn't work on those skills, because I can guarantee you when Alabama cornerbacks come out, those guys know how to pedal, and I've worked with several of them as they go to their combines and to their pro days. Those guys know how to pedal. I've gotten guys from other top-name schools, which I won't even mention, that struggle with it, and it just blows my mind that you played high school football as a defensive back, and you went to this top school, this Power 5 school, some that were in the college football playoff, and you struggle to backpedal, and now you're trying to go to the NFL. And that is definitely a function of the disappearing Indy. 15 minutes is just not going to be enough. My ideal time would be 25 minutes. I understand that as your season wears on, you probably won't be able to get that sometimes. You should make it a point, though, as a defensive coordinator, as a coach, as the guys who made the schedule, to give your DB coach an opportunity to do that. Find it somewhere in the schedule. Maybe you run a few less plays in that 7-on-7 period, or you just chop down that team period a little bit, and you get into that Indy. Now, as players, Indy period is kind of like good food when you're a kid, drinking your milk, or lifting weights. Guys might not like it. They might find it difficult. They might find it annoying. I know there was guys when we played, some days you just don't feel like doing it. Just don't feel like going through these drills. You're going to get tired. Your coach is going to be on your ass. He can see everything that you're doing. And I think that was the biggest part, is that coach is seeing everything that you're doing, as opposed to 7-on-7 where you might screw up on one side of the field and he missed it. Same thing in team. In Indy period, he's seeing everything, every drill. He's on your ass. And some guys didn't like it at the time. But when you get in that game and you come out of that break, or you jam that receiver, or you have done enough drills and you know what to do when you get into these situations in the game, you love the fact that you have really good Indy period and you've got a good coach that can coach you through that. It really is about teaching guys what to do when they get into the certain situations that they get into in a game. And if I could just draw a comparison, it's like a police officer It's, you have got to, in your training as a police officer, I would imagine, never been a cop, but you've got to teach guys what to do in certain situations when they're out there in the street, when they're confronted with a homeless person or a person having a mental breakdown, or they're in a shootout, or they're serving a warrant. And if they don't do enough of that training, they're going to run into that situation out on the street and they're just not going to be prepared for it. Imagine going to serve a warrant and you haven't done much training for that. You get your head blown off one of these days. And that's what happens as defensive backs out of the field. I'm speaking as a former player, coach, trainer. And I hear it from a lot of guys that I train. Just indie period is nothing. It's a waste. I don't have any tools. I mean, it allows me to have more importance in a player's life as a trainer. Thank you, guys. But I hate it because they need that from their coach. I can work, the trainer and the coach should work in conjunction to develop that player to be the best that he can be. And so they're finding themselves out in the field, in a game, like a police officer out on the street, and they're not prepared for the situations that they are running into. And they are failing in these situations because they're just not adequately prepared, because their indie period is 15 minutes, of which some of that time might be dedicated to learning the scheme and going over the minutia of rules in the coverages that you guys run. That's going to be a topic for another time. Just all 101 rules in a coverage. But you want your guys to play fast. Can't wait to get to that. But anyway, I'm going to put a bow on this. I'm going to just say this to you. 15 minutes is never going to be enough for an indie period, even if you don't devote some of that time to the scheme. I'm telling you coaches that right now, it's not enough. And if you are a player stuck in a system like that, you had better find the time outside of your indie period to get to work in. Come to practice earlier, stay late, man, maybe even on an off day, but you've got to work on your skills. If you're a team that's playing press man, it's super technical, man. In 15 minutes, if you're just working a portion of that time on your press skills, you're just not, if that's the only thing that you do, you're just not going to be good at it. Playing press man, in my eyes, is like hitting a baseball. It's very technical. It's very difficult, not as difficult as hitting a baseball, but it's very technical. If you don't spend time doing it, you just won't be good at it. If you could even imagine how much time baseball players spend hitting the ball, seeing pitches, hitting off the tee, and working on their hitting so that they can be successful 30% of the time that they come to the plate, you realize, man, that the little 5 minutes that you're spending a day working on your press man skills are just not ever going to be enough for you to be really good at it. And I'm just talking about press man. I'm not talking about your ability to come out of your breaks, to weave, to crossover run, to flip your hips, all that other good stuff that's in there, plus all of the other situations that you might find yourself in. It's just not enough time. So coaches, if 15 minutes is what you're giving guys, I'm here to tell you it's not enough. Figure out a way to get more. If you give these guys an opportunity to get more tools, better tools, sharpen their tools within your system is going to work better. So if you've got to chop some things off of your system, maybe not run some certain coverages, or maybe make some of your coverages less complicated, just to give those guys more time to work on their individual skills, I promise you, your coverages are going to work a whole lot better. All right, moving on to the next thing here. Real quick, I had a guy, it was funny, I had someone contact me on Instagram and talk to me about a big name college coach, which I will not name. You guys can kind of figure this one out on your own. Maybe real sharp ones there that pay attention to college football. Guy tells me that someone on this staff who coaches defense says the head coach is all about the offense winning and having success when they run their plays, when they do their one-on-ones, when they, you know, anything involving offense versus defense. It's ultra important to this coach that the offense wins, which blew me away. But not really when, we're talking about this particular team. It explained a lot of what I've seen from the team over the last couple of years. What's funny is, soon thereafter, I received a DM from a high school kid that brought up the same thing. It's wild because I've never really heard too much about this. I know coaches that, you know, lean towards offense, but not to this extent where they say the offense always needs to win. And had a kid, Connor, from Indiana, who wrote me and asked me the question, what do I do if the coach always wants the offense to win when we're doing one-on-ones? How do I prepare myself when that is the situation? So here's my advice. And, you know, some coaches may or may not like this. I'd love to hear your comments on this. Feel free to do so in the comment section down below. And if you're on Anchor, you can always drop a comment, or you can leave a voice message. Or if you're hearing this clip, one of these clips on Twitter or anything like that, feel free to leave your comment. My advice is, if you're a guy with clout, then I would say to you, maybe not do the one-on-ones. If you can pass on the one-on-ones in practice, do that, because there's a chance you might develop some bad habits there. And if you already know what to do in your man-to-man situations, then I wouldn't go the route of potentially, you know, forming some bad habits, because you got to just let the offense win. You don't defend the ball as it's coming in. There may be some safety reasons why, you know, the coach does that. But I suspect that's not it. It's just about the offense winning and having success and rehearsing success. Anyway, if you don't have that kind of clout, or your coach is adamant about you going through the one-on-ones where you just let the offense win and let them catch the ball and all that other good stuff, and you can't, you know, achieve any success in terms of the result, then I would say to you, really make it a focus on your technique and not so much the result, which is what I feel anyway in one-on-ones, because, you know, we all know in one-on-one, sometimes our routes can be extremely unrealistic and they don't work for us. And, it's really not about the result. It's not about I broke a pass or I got an interception. It's really about being in the proper position, working your technique, doing the right thing with your eyes, doing the right thing with your feet, doing the right thing with your hands, and then eventually having that translate into the game. So it really is about your technique, and this really make it more about that. Make sure you're in position, get as close as you can to that receiver, and if you're not allowed to defend the ball, then so be it. But really hone in on your technique and forget completely about the result, since the result, you already know what the result is supposed to be, what it's always going to be, and that is a catch for the offense. I would work more on my off man if that's something that the team does at all, and spend a little more time with that and do less, you know, on the press stuff, since it sounds like in these situations, you don't, because, you know, from what I heard from the player, they have to use a soft press technique. They're not really allowed to put hands on the player, which, again, excuse me, sounds rather absurd, but in that situation, if soft press is not what you do, not what you want to do, not really what you guys do as a team, I would work more on the off man. And in the times that I'm working the soft press, work the soft press technique, because even though you might be a hard press type of corner, there are situations where you would need to use soft press. It would be good to know how to use it, good to have it in your tool belt, and then you just work that. And don't get so frustrated and caught up in the actual part of the result. You know, because I do have an article on allicebcamp.com where I talk about it's not about the result when you're in one-on-ones. Don't focus so much on that. It's really, really about the technique. So don't get so frustrated, even though that sounds a little crazy. And I have a sense that the offense always win, must win, is not just for one-on-ones. It's literally for everything in the, you know, that happens at practice, 7-on-7 team, all the periods, et cetera, et cetera. And that usually doesn't bode well on game days for the defense, but it is what it is. We can't get into all of that right now. So that would be my advice to Connor, who's contacted me with this, you know, crazy situation that you find. I like for a practice to be competitive. I would want guys to be competitive and all of the situations of practice. Yes, injuries happen. This is football, and that's a part of this game. Guys get injured in practice. You don't want to have that happen a whole bunch, but you also want to be you want to be competitive in practice because the games become easier. That's just the whole atmosphere I've ever grown up in, from Little League, where, you know, I had success, to high school, where we won a championship, to right here. You already know what it was in practice. You've already heard all the stories. We've seen the U 30 for 30 documentary. The hardest thing was practice, and that made the games really, really easy. So that, I would think, is the situation that, or the climate you want to create as a coach. But if that's not what you are experiencing, then I would say to you, do the best you can with those situations the way that I was telling you. Work a little bit more of your off technique. And, you know, when you, if you have to work your soft press when you're doing these one-on-ones, focus a whole bunch on your technique and honing that down to the times when you would need to use it. So, all right, moving on from that, we're going to move on to the main topic of the show today. And that is, this is a very important topic, and that is, there's not a secret drill for that. And I'm, you know, I really got to talk to you guys about why, you know, I say that, why I am, why this is even a topic for the Indie Drills podcast today. Sometimes things in life are just simple. They end up being so simple that you refuse to believe them. And in your mind, you're saying, if it was that simple, then everyone could, you know, be able to do it. So we sometimes put a full hand in the face of something being simple. And something I often get asked, either in DMs or, you know, I'll get an email question, and it'll be something to the effect of, coach, is there a drill that can help me be better at this other drill? Is there a drill that can help me backpedal better? Is there a drill that can, you know, help me kick slide better? Is there a drill that can help me crossover run better, or something to that effect? And my answer sometimes, you know, maybe it deflates people. I don't know. But why do you need a drill for a drill? We have gotten into the situation where we are drilling ourselves to death. And don't get me wrong, there are great drills out there. And there's also this great feeling as a coach or even as a player when you come up with this drill that feels like ends up being a good drill and helps you maybe get better at a specific skill on the field. But I'm here to tell you that more often than not, you're going to come up with a drill that's not good for you. The majority of the drills that you come up with are just not going to be good drills, and you are going to end up having more drills than you actually need. If you want to be good at backpedaling, backpedal. If you want to get good at be in your crossover run, crossover run. If you want to get good in your kick shuffle, then in your kick slide, then kick slide. And that seems very simple to people, very difficult for them to understand, because it's like, oh, it's just, that's just way too simple. If it was just as simple as backpedaling to get better at backpedaling, then everyone would be good at backpedaling. No, that's not what happens. It's, people aren't good at backpedaling because they don't put in the necessary time at it. If you ask the common person in the street to stop and backpedal like a DB, they're probably going to fall and they're not going to be too good at it. Why? Because they don't spend any amount of time doing it. And if you ask a 12-year NFL veteran to backpedal versus a guy that's just entering into college, both who have played defensive back before, the 12-year NFL vet is going to backpedal better than that guy just entering into college who maybe played defensive back in high school. Why? Because the 12-year vet has spent more time doing this particular skill than the guy just now entering into college. And that's what it really boils down to. Bruce Lee, the famous Bruce Lee, the martial artist, the kung fu master, had this famous saying. He fears more a guy who has practiced one kick 10,000 times versus a guy who has 10,000 kicks. You have to put the time into the skill. And so guys will not, everyone's looking for this secret drill that will give them the results fast. That's the world we live in, right? Microwaves, social media, we get answers quickly. We've got AI now, we've got ChatGPT, gives us all the answers we want right then, right now. Well, that's great. I love technology. It's made all of our lives easier, but there are some things that we just can't get good at, boom, right away. Some things really do require the 10,000 hours. And so there isn't a drill for another drill. You can drill yourself to death. I see coaches doing this. I see players doing it. They're looking for that secret drill, that quick answer that's going to give them the skill that they need immediately. And that's just not how this works. Any of you guys out there were Kobe Bryant fans, you know how his work ethic, you know what he would do. Maybe you don't know it to this extent. He'd be in that gym at 5 a.m. in the morning, come hell or high water, and he's doing drills. You know what drills he's doing? Not secret drills that he came up with, not some mythical drills, not drills on top of drills. He was doing the drills that he learned in high school. Basketball is a lot of basics. Defensive back, while very technical, involves a lot of basic moves. You backpedal, you come out of a break, you crossover run, you flip your hips, you weave. You are doing these movements over and over and over in the game. And if you really, really want to be good at them, you've got to do them in practice over and over and over and over again. And there isn't a secret drill to make you better at weaving. There isn't a secret drill to make you better at backpedaling. There isn't a secret drill that's going to get you to cover the fade any better. Now, there's some knowledge you need to have. There's some things you need to know about how to cover a fade, or how to cover a post route, or how to cover a shallow route, or whatever route it is we want to call. There's some knowledge you need to have, but there isn't going to be this secret drill that's going to help you with that. It really is all about putting in the work. You've got to find the core drills. And right now I'm talking to coaches, but players, listen up as well. As a coach, you guys run a particular scheme, and the scheme may be heavily based in press, or it may be a whole bunch of zone where you guys are playing 3D, or you're playing quarters. So, you know, everyone's playing quarters now. So it's quarters, or it's cover two, whatever the case may be. Study your scheme, watch the players in your scheme, see the movements that they are making in the scheme, and you've got to make your drills link up with that. So if you are a heavy cover two base scheme, and all you guys really do in Indy or in your little practice time with your players is pedal over and over and over again, you're not really helping that player. All right. He needs to understand how to play catch. He needs to understand how to slide left and right. He needs those skills. He needs to be able to shuffle left and right and get hands on a guy. All right, your safeties need to backpedal. They definitely need that. But look at the movements that the guys make. And you need to build your drills around that. And there aren't secret drills from that. And so now I'm talking to the player. If you need to get better at press man, you work your kick slide. There's not a secret drill for the kick slide. Yes, I have some good drills that I do. I don't have a ton of drills. I really kill this good core group of drills that really relate to the movements that players make. One of the biggest things that I do in the in season, which happens to be my off season as a trainer, as guys go out and play, is really study the movements of players. What is it that they are doing consistently over and over and over on the field? And I build drills around that. And I'm not trying to gimmick guys. I'm not trying to bring out a bunch of toys and do all these things to make a guy feel like he's getting better when he's not. When I know through all of my experience, I've been around long enough, and I'm thankful for that, to understand that getting better at a skill means doing that skill over and over and over and feeling it and feeling the right movements, feeling the way that it's supposed to make me feel. How do I feel when I'm doing it right? And if need be, film myself doing it or have someone film me and then look at myself on the film. But it's not to see that and then do another drill to get good at that drill. The drill is there to get you better at the skill. The drill is for the skill. The skill is what you're going to take to the game and in competition to play. So you can't drill a drill for another drill for another drill because you're just doing too many drills and you're not going to get the skill. And you're going to have a certain amount of patience as you're doing that drill to get better at it so you eventually develop the skill. And what happens to a lot of guys, players and coaches, is they're not getting the drill fast enough, so they think they need another drill to get good at that drill so that they will develop the skill. The drill develops the skill, and you've got to drill yourself in the drill. Do it over and over and over again, and you start to discover some things. The more you do the drill, the more you get a feeling for how it needs to feel, and you learn things about yourself as it pertains to the drill and how you can get better at it. And I'm talking to my coaches now, not everyone's going to do the drill the way you want it in the beginning. Guys are going to learn the drill at a different pace, whether it's something mental going on, some block that they have. It could be some other coach that they had, the way they did things at another place, or what they did growing up, or another sport that they're playing. You have no idea what the block is in a player's mind. It's just, or it could be just the way that their body is shaped or the way that they move. They're going to learn that at different levels. The point is, though, because one guy got the skill faster than another guy doesn't mean this other guy needs a drill on top of another drill. He may, but 9 times out of 10, it's just this guy needs more practice at it. He just needs more practice at it. One of the guys that I coached that's currently in the NFL came to me as a young player, came as a running back. And that first day in our indie period, I'm here to tell you, he destroyed all the drills. He wasn't very good in any of the drills. Tremendous athlete. But now we're asking him to play defensive back, which is a whole lot of going backwards, sideways, and all that. These were not things that he was doing as a youth football running back. Everything was forward, reading, and cutting left and right. And none of that is what was going on as a defensive back. So he was not very good at any of these drills. And so realizing that, he started putting in the work at the basic drills that we were doing. And credit to him, he put in so much time and work and effort that he eventually became really good at those drills, which developed those skills to the point where he was a top defensive back coming out in high school, a top defensive back coming out of college, and now he's playing in the NFL. And he did not get there because I gave him a whole bunch of secret drills to do that would speed up his time. No, he had to put in the work before practice, after practice, in spring times, in summer times, when he was when we were in our off season. He did all of that and got it to that point. So I guess the overarching point I'm trying to make here is that you've got to put in your 10,000 hours. Okay. If you're learning how to type, there isn't a drill to make you better at typing. You have to type. That's just the way that it is. This goes for any other learning skill. And I get it. In sports, there are, you know, we have the ability to do these drills. And again, there are really good drills out there. It's just you got to find a core of drills that are solid, that develop the skill and stick to those drills. Every now and then you pull something else out, but I'm watching guys going through a whole bunch of different drills. There are way too many drills, and you never really spend enough time on the drills that are going to help you develop the skill, and now you're an undeveloped player. Maybe you're in shape because you're doing so many drills, you're spending so much time out there, so you're in great shape, but you just don't have the skill. And I've seen guys who have been putting in the hours, it's just they're doing way too much. They're trying too many things. There's too many straps, cones, contraptions, and all that being attached to them on the field, and they're not developing the skill that they need. So they get frustrated, and I just don't want to see that for you guys as players, as coaches, whatever. It's the basics can be boring. But what the basics do is make you a champion. They make you elite. They reach, they help you reach your full potential. And that is the end goal here. And so while that might seem boring, while it might seem like, oh, this is something anyone can do, and so this can't be it. No, that's actually it. What you're going to do that a whole lot of other people don't do, don't have the inclination to do, the work ethic to do, is do it so often that you can't be beat doing it, that you have become elite at this particular thing. That's what's going to separate you from the next person, not the secret drill that you brought out. And I understand that we get sold that a lot nowadays. There's a secret tea that you could drink to lose weight, or, you know, there's this secret band that you can use to develop, you know, your muscles, your legs, whatever the case may be. It's not a secret. The secret is putting in your time, your effort, your 10,000 hours, and you will achieve the results that you want because you just put so much time into it. The other thing is that it develops a confidence in you. If you put in so much time at something, in a particular skill, because you were doing a drill, it just makes you that much confident. So I'm going to go back to Kobe Bryant. He was so confident out on that court because he had spent so many hours in that basketball court working out and doing those drills. So many 5 a.m. in the morning workouts, doing the same drill over and over, getting to that spot, shooting the ball, dribbling, going to his left, whatever the case may be, and done it so much that he just, when he lined up on the court and faced someone, he knows, I did this a whole lot more than this guy. Because of all of the hours that I put in on those specific drills, there's no way this guy in front of me can stop me. And I'm here to tell you that confidence is a really big part of being successful as a defensive back. And what's the first and foremost way that you can build confidence is by putting in the practice time and the hours. It's studying, knowing your scheme, knowing what the offense is doing, and then knowing your footwork, your drills, your skills, knowing that, having done it so much that you just can't be denied. And you just won't get that feeling from doing 20 drills to get one skill. There's just not enough hours for you to get really good at those drills to develop that skill. Find the drill. And I hesitate to say drills, plural, but drill that's going to develop that skill and do it over and over and over and over. Not only will you develop that skill, you will develop the confidence that will be brought to you and with you out onto the field so that when that moment comes, you do it automatically, you do it with confidence, you go make the play, and everything works out for you, all right? So if you guys picked up on that, listen, the comment section is always open. I look forward to you guys' feedback. Also, you know, I answer questions on the Indie Drill Podcast. I grab one and put it out every week, but just because I didn't read your question doesn't mean I won't answer your question. So I really, really like those. Go ahead and drop those in the comment section. Give this video a like and a share if you're watching on YouTube. If you are listening to me on one of your streaming podcast apps, whether that is Apple, whether it's Anchor, which is now Podcasters, or just straight up on Spotify, you know, go ahead and give this a like and subscribe to the Indie Drills Podcast, because I'm going to be putting these out. You don't want to miss the next one. So make sure you're notified and you catch up on all of your DB stuff, because there are a whole lot of DB podcasts out there. So I hope you guys appreciate it. Finally, on the way out the door, once again, 101 DB tips. If you play ball, if you're a DB, you're trying to get to the elite level, get interceptions, all that good stuff. It's right here in this book. Again, available in soft cover or ebook edition. Grab that. Check out the link down below. And hey, that's it. My time's up. Thank you guys for watching and listening to the Indie Drills Podcast. See you guys on the next show.